Welcome to the 124th episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. I'm Quizmaster Lee, and as usual, I'm joined by the wonderful Quizmaster, Mark Davis.
And I'm working on a book about the Satanic Panic.
Oh, yeah?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's what Sarah Marshall says in You're Wrong About, which I've been obsessively listening to.
Oh, is that where you got that question? You brought a question on the No-No a couple episodes ago about that.
I've had a couple questions that I've gotten through listening that either that I get directly from the podcast. As a matter of fact, Abby Cosden, Mike C's wife, just sent me a video this morning about listening to the, which episode was it? It was either a Tanya Harding episode, I think maybe a Tanya Harding episode, where they talk about the song Jump for My Love by Pointer Sisters, which had the parenthesized name because they didn't want to get confused with what song.
Jump by Van Halen?
Very good, yeah.
That's immediately what I thought of when you said jump. I was like, oh, Van Halen.
Exactly. So yeah, she was listening to the podcast and came across that little bit. And she was like, if I can catch up to where you are on the podcast, I'll be able to know some of the questions that you have. So
that's what I was thinking. I need to start listening to this. I'll start doing better on our podcast.
And I've been telling people, I've told people, listen to this podcast on Zoom and live. I think like the last 2 weeks, I'm like, if you listen to this podcast, you'll probably get some of the stuff that I'm asking, you know, in some roundabout way, because it is so fascinating. I'm listening to like a 9 or 10 part episode about the O.J. Simpson trial, which is really fascinating. Yeah.
And Rumpelstiltskin Mike C on our last episode, he had an advantage, or you did. You did, because
I did.
Yeah, yes, he brought a question from that. So, yeah, thanks to Mike for coming on the podcast and Patrick last week. It was a wonderful episode.
Great times.
Yeah. And we have another fresh episode, just me and Mark this time, though, for y'all.
Just the two of us.
Mark, you got any cool categories this week?
Do I have some cool categories? That is me stretching time so I can look them up. I do. Music. Movies.
Great.
Same. Oh, really?
Oh, I don't think I have any music, though. Oh, yeah, I do. I have a movie soundtracks question, so kind of both.
And then, I don't know, from there I'm going to go a little crazy, I think. I think I got maybe a question about geography.
Was Daddy gone crazy?
What about you?
Well, my script is for some reason not updated right here, but off the top of my head, soft drinks, movie soundtracks, famous families, Greek mythology, movie casting, U.S. presidents, and I'm sure I'm forgetting one. A surprise, I suppose.
Ooh, yeah. I like a little mystery. I'm building a mystery.
Before we get to our Sarah McLachlan tribute quiz, let's go over our weekly wrap-up. On Monday, unfortunately, our Monday quiz at Palace Pub and Wine Bar was canceled due to then-Tropical Storm Etta.
Inclement weather.
So we'll be hosting the prepared quiz tonight, November 16th instead, so we hope to see you there for that. And then on Wednesday, Etta left and then came back, but we soldiered through with a quiz at Pointy Bell Brewing Company. It was actually all new players that night, Mark, getting their first taste in the no-no.
Fantastic.
Yeah, 7 teams entered, but it was hashtag Sex Cyclone who took the victory, as well as the first and third rounds. The second went to Forby. And our biggest learners were the Lifesavers, who will be picking the final wager category this week. Mark, how did your trivia go at Nice Guys Pizza on Wednesday evening?
It went well. We had a good amount of teams at Nice Guys, as well as on the old Zoom. The first round and second round, both locally, went to Upper Class Twits and Fam. That's proverbial lightkeeper Matt.
Congrats.
Absolutely. And swept into the third round with 28 points. Going up against a team next closest to winning had 12 points, followed by negative 7, negative 11, and negative 9, also negative 6. So they set apart a pretty good amount of points there for the win. On Zoom, Whiskey Tango with 33 points in the first round, taking that home. The second round with 52 points, on winning that as well. And a complete shocker, winning the last round with 54 points. So sweeping on Zoom, Whiskey Tango.
Uh-huh. Par for the course, it sounds, for them.
Indeed.
On Thursday, we had our regular virtual pub quiz on Twitch. The winner of quiz 91 was Molly B. Twitching, who won with 121,481 points. Apple 30309, and first time player, but listener of the podcast, Mappy 1984 took the second and third places respectively. Quiz 92 actually went to Mappy 1984, who scored 100,885 points, their first victory on their first night playing. Not bad. Proverbial Lightkeeper Matt and Grantastic Glenn were second and third place for that quiz. And our audio round was a Slow Jams artist and group identification, which was won by our very own Rumpelstiltskin, Kenya, who scored 137,998 points. Mappy 1984 and Molly B. Twitching getting second and third place on that. It was a fun night all around. If you want to play No Nonsense this week, you can do so. Tonight, Monday, November 16th, we'll be back at the Palace Pub and Wine Bar for live trivia, asking trivia questions about football, one-hit wonders, Netflix shows, famous founders, 2000s video games, 2010s music, and more for real this time. We're just going to take the quiz that we had prepared last week and do it again. So join us at 7:30 p.m., or do it for the first time, I should say, to play trivia and have a chance to win some free bottles of wine.
Feels like the first time.
Mm-hmm. This Wednesday, November 11th, we're back at Pointy Bell Brewing Company in Fort Myers, Florida. Categories for that quiz will include sports, documentary films, U.S. history, famous landmarks, anime, 70s music, and more. We'll get started once again at 7:30 p.m. You can find more details in the show notes for that. And if you're in Cape Coral, or anywhere, really, you can play Mark's Trivia on Wednesday at Nice Guys Pizza in Cape Coral or on Zoom, starting at 8 p.m. And once again, the link for that is available in the show notes. And of course, you can play No Nonsense Trivia on Twitch at our regularly scheduled time of Thursday, November 12th at 8 p.m. Eastern. I'll be asking questions about Shakespeare, true crime, Star Wars cameos, celebrity sex tapes, bands that have been on Beavis and Butthead, and more. Visit twitch.tv/nononsensetrivia and give us a follow to get a reminder for that. And make sure you follow us at No Nonsense Trivia on Twitch and social media to stay updated on all of our podcasts, streams, and events. Join us,
won't you?
Thank you for reminding me. Last week, I did say that Michael Hobbs of the aforementioned podcast, mm-hmm. You're Wrong About, sounds like Butthead, but I meant sounds like Beavis. I heard myself afterward, and I was going, yeah, and I was like, that's not Butthead. Really early miscorrection.
Yes. All right. We'll have, I don't know if we have any miscorrections. We do have some no notes later, but first we're going to take a little break and then do a full round of questions in round one.
Delicious.
A soft drinks question to kick off our first round for you.
Okie dokie.
What soft drink, developed by pharmacist Charles Alderton?
Okay.
Yeah, pharmacists make you feel good. Made its international debut at the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis and was legally deemed not a cola in 1963.
Can I get that one more time?
Absolutely. What soft drink, developed by pharmacist Charles Alderton, made its international debut at the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis and was legally deemed not a cola in the 1960s?
Are you looking for a brand name?
Mm-hmm.
You are.
Yes.
Well, shit.
The brand of soft drink.
Hmm. I remember writing a question about Dr. Pepper that I don't remember it having that name. Dr. what Alderton?
Charles Alderton.
I think it was Dr. Pepper that was first sold in some like local store, corner store. But how sweet would it be? It's not, it's named Doctor. And it's not considered some kind of medicine. And I could see with the 23 different things in it that they were like trying to whip something up. My original guess was ginger ale. But ginger ale isn't a kind. I don't know if I wouldn't guess can't like Schweppes. Maybe. But I have a feeling that maybe I just don't have all my facts about Dr. Pepper. And Dr. Pepper feels like a. Wait a minute.
1904 is when it made its international debut.
Okay, no, because Dr. Pepper says established 19 something, and I don't think it's then. I think it's 19 like 20 or 30 something. I think that might be part of the question I asked. Well, I know it's not Coke. Maybe it's Pepsi. Maybe it's Pepsi. Trying to read your eyes. We're recording in the same room again, and I'm in love again, all over again.
Together forever, wherever you are.
I don't think it would be Sprite, but I mean, it could be anything. 1904.
Mm-hmm.
When did Coke come out? I'm going to say Pepsi.
No. Sorry, buddy. Good God, that's loud. Why is that so loud?
Lee, there's blood coming from underneath your headphones.
Oh, my God.
Please prepare me so loud.
What? Mark, the answer is Dr. Pepper.
Oh, my God.
Yes. So of the origins of it, pharmacist Alderton wanted to create a soda that tasted the way that his drugstore smelled.
Disgusting.
But there's some dispute, actually, because the name is actually the soda is named after Dr. Charles T. Pepper, who was the boss of the owner of the drugstore, Morrison's Drugstore, who Morrison once worked under Dr. Charles T. Pepper, who was a fan of making carbonated beverages based on by involving several different herbs and spices, and had one called Swamp Root that had raisins in it. So there's some dispute about, like, is it because it smelled like the drugstore? Is it based on this old Dr. T. Pepper recipe? But yeah, Dr. Pepper making its international debut at the 1904 World's Fair. Yeah, predicting his success there, he opened up a bottling factory in 1901, 3 years earlier.
Damn.
And it paid off. It was immensely successful. That was also the same World's Fair that introduced, I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but you know the story about the ice cream cone, how the ice cream guy ran out of glass bowls and next to him was a waffle maker. And he said, "Give me one of those waffles." And he started rolling them up and serving the ice cream in it. Mm-hmm. That happened at the 1904 World's Fair. It was also the debut of the hamburger, the hot dog, peanut butter, iced tea, the club sandwich, cotton candy, brand name Jell-O, and at the Florida booth, there was a modified pomelo fruit called the grapefruit, which sold for $100 a box in today's currency.
Holy shit.
Yes, debut of the grapefruit at the 1904 World's Fair.
Now, my question mm-hmm. was this. What popular soft drink began in Morrison's Old Corner Drugstore in Waco, Texas in 1885?
Yes. So it was already established in 1885, but it didn't really catch on nationally until 1904 when it was taken to the World's Fair. I said it made its international debut.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. That's...
There was over 50 countries in attendance, Mark.
Okay. Here's your first question.
You don't like that.
No, I don't. I don't think I do.
I didn't say anything wrong. I didn't lie.
No, but here's your first question. What 1983 film based off of a TV series is known for a stunt helicopter crash that killed three actors, two of which were children, resulting in the establishment of the Motion Picture Entertainment Unit to enforce fire safety regulations and requirements in the entertainment industry.
Hmm. You know I'm going to want that one more time.
I do.
Thank you.
What 1983 film, based off of a TV series, is known for a stunt helicopter crash that killed three actors, two of which were children, resulting in the establishment of the Motion Picture and Entertainment Unit to enforce fire safety regulations and requirements in the entertainment industry? The light's hitting you just right. You look... This looks like a picture that would be on the, like the dust jacket of a book.
As I gently stroke my beard and suss.
Lee Bretschneider was a teacher at FSU at Florida State University, graduating from
adjunct
TCC.
Professor. Adjunct.
I'll have you know,
I was an adjunct. So I'm thinking, my first thought is MASH. There's that famous opening of the TV show with the helicopter. There was a movie, but I don't think 1983, that seems really late for MASH. I'm pretty sure that was on the air in the 60s. If I remember correctly, late 60s, early 70s. Right? Maybe it was 83. What other TV shows? You said a TV show based on a movie, right?
A movie based on a TV show.
Oh, movie based on TV show. Oh, because MASH was a TV show based on a movie, so I got to get it the other way around. Movie based on a TV show. Tales from the Crypt. I don't know if there were any helicopters in that. And I don't know. I just don't know the story, so I got nothing to go on there. The Avengers, but that movie came out in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s. Early 80s movies, 83. My movie soundtracks question is an 80s movie.
Ooh.
But a few years later. Gosh, Tales from the Crypt, I think that was later too. Maybe it's Pat? The Saturday Night Live sketch?
Julia Sweeney at the time was like 10.
Yeah.
Maybe she was one of the female actors that died, or the kid actors that died.
Movie based on a series.
Yes.
How don't I know this? How do I have no guesses?
The kind of thing you feel like you should know.
83. Yeah, it's early 80s.
That's how I felt.
I'm trying to think of like 70s TV shows like Chips. No. The Dips? A-Team? MacGyver? The movie that they made based on MacGyver was called MacGruber. I don't know if MacGyver had his own movie. RoboCop? No. Doctor Who? No Doctor Who movies. 1983. The A-Team was like after 83. I feel like that was like late 80s. Gosh, this is tough. Well, I have nothing left to suss, so I'm just going to go with the A-Team, even though I'm almost certain that's not correct.
That is incorrect. I don't believe there was an A-Team movie until the one that came out.
Right. I just know it's wrong, but yeah. I have no good guess. You see, I'm in an A-Team mood. I have nothing.
I don't blame you. Mm-hmm. The correct answer is the Twilight Zone. The Twilight Zone. Done by John Landis. Reading a little bit from the Wikipedia article about it, which is very good. There's also a documentary on Shudder about it. There's like a series about different movies that were considered, you know, haunted to some extent or with a hex on it. The helicopter was piloted by Vietnam War veteran Dorsey Wingo. It was hovering near a large mortar effect. He turned the aircraft 180 degrees to the left for the next camera shot. The effect detonated while the helicopter's tail rotor was still above it, causing the rotor to fail and detach from the tail.
Man.
The main actor, Vic Morrow, dropped one of the children in the water and was reaching out to grab her when the helicopter fell on top of them. Morrow and Lee were decapitated by the helicopter's main rotor blades. Shit. Chen, the second child, was crushed to death by the right landing skid. So basically they were having these children there when they shouldn't have been. They were getting paid under the table. Children were not allowed to be at night shoots. And they basically snuck these kids in, to be able to do this scene. It talks about how, they asked the mother to say that they were just there to visit the movie set, not that they were actually in. It says George Folsey Jr. told the children's parents not to tell any firefighters on the set that the children were part of the scene and hid them from a fire safety officer who also worked as a welfare worker in the movie. Or I'm sorry, on the set. A fire safety officer was concerned that the blast would cause a crash, but he did not tell Landis of his concerns.
Wow. I didn't know that John Landis directed that.
He did, yeah, and he was actually tried in court. I think he was acquitted. It also says that a camera operator on board testified that Landis had earlier shrugged off warnings about the stunt with a comment, "We may lose the helicopter." So very, very intense, but caused a lot of movie sets to start cracking down on making sure that directors and films were following all the rules.
Well, at least something good came of that tragedy, if there was anything. Some silver lining.
Yeah.
And I know it means nothing now, but I did think of the Twilight Zone, but never circled back around to it. When I was thinking of Tales from the Crypt, I was like, maybe Twilight Zone. So I just feel like a big old dummy. Movie soundtracks, Mark. Okay. Your next category. Who's Johnny? Was a number one Billboard hit performed by El DeBarge for the soundtrack of what 1986 sci-fi comedy film?
Thank God you gave me, because I had a feeling I knew it from the main character's name, but I wasn't sure when you said sci-fi. It gave me a little bit of a push. I heard they were supposed to be remaking this. It is a movie called, oh boy, hold on. I know. Ooh, this.
A twist.
Oh no. Short Circuit. I was like, all I know is Johnny Five.
That's right.
Still alive, which I believe is Fisher Stevens not in there as a super racist Indian?
Yes, he is okay. In brownface.
Yes.
According to an interview that he did with Aziz Ansari, the character was not originally Indian when he signed on for the role, and he was fired from the role and replaced with what's his name? Branson Pinchot.
Oh, yes.
Who then left to film Perfect Strangers. So they went back and rehired Fisher Stevens. And at this point, the character had been changed to an Indian. And he was like, all right.
Wow.
I'll do the accent. I'll, color my skin dark. And
so why did that get changed between him and Bronson Pinchot?
It was a script change, apparently.
But Bronson Pinchot is an Indian either.
Right. No, I don't know. It was
like,
I could
see them being like, we're going to bring on Bronson Pinchot, and then being like, all right, well, now we've made these jokes that like play on him being from wherever Bronson Pinchot is from.
Right. Some Eastern European country.
Yeah. And we want to keep that. So we're going to like, have you say some stuff? No,
I'm not sure where. I think he was just saying there was extra development after he had already initially agreed to do it. And
no, you know, I got you. I'm just saying, like, what a weird, like,
it's weird to begin with.
If they got an Indian dude and they inserted all these Indian jokes, then I wouldn't still wouldn't understand, but I'd be like, oh, okay, they just didn't want to lose those jokes and they could get Fisher Stevens in a pinch. But they were just like, hey, we just need an Indian now. Like, yeah. At some point, like, it's just got to be.
Yeah, well, if they remake it, hopefully they will update that.
Oh,
yeah. And also, for the music video for this Who's Johnny, it does not feature Fisher Stevens. It does star Ally Sheedy. She appears in it. And is Steve Guttenberg in it? Kind of. They have a cardboard cutout of Steve Guttenberg with a puppeted mouth moving for some reason. It is okay. It is hilariously bad.
Yeah.
So we're going to put a link to that in the show notes. Check that out. El DeBarge's Who's Johnny? Very good, Mark.
Thank you. Here's a music question for you.
Mm-hmm.
How many singles from Michael Jackson's Thriller became top 10 hits?
Hmm. Well, a lot. The answer is a lot.
Because, I can't accept that.
Yeah, you need a numeric, right? A numeral, I mean.
I do.
Here's the thing about Thriller.
Tell me the thing about Thriller, will you?
It was the best-selling album for 2 years in a row. I think 1985 and 1986. No. 84 and 85, maybe? I can't remember which years, but 2 years in a row. And in order to do that, you're going to need a steady stream of singles. Now, what songs are on Thriller? Well, there's at least one, Thriller. I know that. And that's the extent of my knowledge of Thriller. I'm not exactly sure what other of his hits. If Beat It's on Thriller. Bad is obviously on Bad. But I'm just going to say it's a high number. I'm thinking it's at least six. Maybe more.
Do you know how many songs are on Thriller?
I don't.
Nine. I will tell you that.
Okay. I still feel good about six. I almost said 10. So with one to spare.
I figured I'd at least give you like a ceiling.
And you said top 10 singles?
Yes. Top 10 hits.
I'm going to keep the faith here. Are they all top 10 hits? Every track? I don't think so. I'm going to go with six. That's 2/3. That's pretty good.
I'm sorry. That's wrong. Wrong. You're close. The Girl Is Mine, Billie Jean, Beat It, Wanna Be Starting Something, Human Nature, PYT, and Thriller. Seven.
Ooh. Okay.
Seven out of nine.
Yeah.
Only two songs on that album did not make it into the top 10. I don't think they were even released as singles.
Do you know what they are? That's how unforgettable. That's how forgettable they are.
Yeah, I was gonna say I wouldn't if I didn't have the Wikipedia article right in front of me. But they are "The Lady in My Life" and "Baby Be Mine." Interestingly, also, if you are a fan of the band Toto, like I am, you would probably know that Stephen Lukather, David Paich, Jeff Porcaro, and Steve Porcaro all played on this record, all would go on to join the hit rock band Toto. They were also the backing band for Boz Scaggs, and kind of like a house super band. They played on a bunch of these. Greg Fillinganes also, who would fill in every once in a while for David Paich on tour for Toto, also played a bunch of keyboards on this record. And of course, there's the Eddie Van Halen Beat It solo, which he did for free and allegedly in one take. Came in, plugged in a guitar, played the solo, killed it, and was done.
That's how you do it.
That's how you do it. Save some time, baby.
Famous families is my final category for you.
Okay.
For this round.
Yes.
What influential 19th century English novelist was the progeny of political philosopher William Godwin and the late feminist writer Mary Wollstonecraft, who died shortly after giving birth to their child? What influential 19th century English novelist was the progeny of political philosopher William Godwin and the late feminist writer Mary Wollstonecraft, who died shortly after giving birth to their child? William Godwin being basically the progenitor of anarchist thought. I learned how to say that word properly. Thanks for the miscorrection on that. Mary Wollstonecraft, known as an early feminist writer. Their child was what influential 19th century English novelist?
Oh. Is it someone who's super liberal, or is it ironically someone who is super conservative? Is it a man or is it a woman? All these questions and more.
This question is suited for a team, really, but I thought maybe you might know it.
I can't think of any English writers with the name Wollstonecraft or the other one, so they must use either another name or have changed their name at some point, or it's a woman, and she got married, and that's why she got a different last name, which would be my guess. Could easily be a pen name. Maybe I'll have to hit you now with an author question that I've got in my back pocket.
All right, that's fair.
A tough one. It's one of those like...
Oh, you want to punish me now.
It's one of those ones that authors will like drop the knowledge on you, and you know it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What if it was Ayn Rand? They're not 19th century, though. Who wrote, another one of these. Oh no. Where I've got to like try and think of the answer to think if it's even the answer that would be the real answer.
Yep.
Who wrote Pride and Prejudice?
Two steps back.
What's her name? Lee. What I did. Fuck. English female writers. 19th century. Oh, we're reading Little Women by... Is that even the same person who wrote Pride and Prejudice? Oh, I'm going to say Jane Austen.
Wrong. Oh, no.
I was hoping
you
not
finally
to hear that
came
buzzer.
Upon the name, but that was right. That was the wrong answer. The
I'm
correct
happy
answer
enough.
Mary Wollstonecraft's daughter was named Mary Shelley.
Oh,
Mee Godwin.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. As a teenager, she met and later eloped with one of her father's political followers, the poet Percy Shelley. And at 18, on a couple's trip with Claire Claremont and Lord Byron, the four began a competition to see who could write the best ghost story. And Mary Shelley conceived the story of Frankenstein after a late night conversation about electricity's effect on inanimate matter. Based on this competition, they deemed her the winner.
Do you want your author question now or you want it later?
Just give it to me now. Let's get it over with.
I'm going to give you the hard version.
All right.
What does CS stand for with C.S. Lewis? Now, I mean, you know, I guess you could say it has a pretty infinite amount of realistic answers.
Potential answers. Are you telling me this is a wild answer? This is not what I would expect.
The first name is Sussible. Okay. It is an actual human,
a normal
being,
given name,
male name. The middle name is a little more bizarre. The middle name is the last name of a famous singing group. I'll give you that as kind of a makeshift hint as we go.
Is it Christopher Supreme Lewis? The Supremes? I'm going to go with Christopher Supreme based on that hint.
You are incorrect. The Supremes were not the last name of a singing group. They weren't all named Supreme.
Oh, I thought you meant that his last name was the name of the singing group. And that sounded absurd
to me. His last name is Lewis.
Right.
The correct answer is Clive Staples. Lewis.
Okay. Staples.
As Mavis Staples.
I see. The Staples sisters. Singers.
Yes.
The Staples sisters? Sisters? Singers?
I think at one point they're the sisters, and at one point they're the singers also, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but
it's like a Great British Bake Off and Great British Baking Show.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
They just changed it for some reason. Like, I'm fine with Bake Off.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of sounds like Jerk Off.
But Staples... Thank you for whispering that. It seems like one of those weird middle names that you'll remember with C.S. Lewis. No one ever knows what C.S. stands for. Clive Staples Lewis.
I did not. You taught that to me.
There you are.
Let's take a little break, okay. And then we'll get back, and we have a couple no-notes here.
Sounds good.
Right, we're back.
Yeah.
Let's listen to this jazzy Miscorrections theme from David Holbrook, David Holbrook, David Holbrook.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you, David, for that.
More jazz in this thing.
And if you're musically inclined, send us a Miscorrection theme, please, or Rate My Question theme. We'll be happy to play it on the no-no here. We have a, I call it a no-note, even though he says it's not a no-note. This is from Mike Nessus. Mike says, this isn't a no-note, but an embellishment of a Rate My Question that I thought you might like. The Rolls-Royce hood ornament, the Spirit of Ecstasy, is modeled after the founder's secretary and longtime lover. He was unable to marry her due to the fact that she was below his social standing, but they had an affair for decades. Interesting that he didn't make it this a statue of his wife, but his longtime lover instead.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like almost like a consolation prize to me. Like, I can't marry you, but you have a dream of being a hood ornament. You'll feel the breeze on your face.
It's beautiful.
And then we have a no note here from our new proverbial light keepers, Ryan and Molly. They write, hi, Lee and Mark. I've been listening to the podcast for I've been listening to the podcast for about a year and a half now, and I just wanted to send you a thank you note. Your podcast has been a ton of fun to listen to, and it's something my wife and I especially enjoy on long road trips. Due to the pandemic, we haven't been able to go to in-person trivia, but for the last 2 months, we've been enjoying Lee's Thursday night Twitch trivia. Last night, we, Molly Be Twitching, that's their username for you, those of you that play our Twitch trivia on Thursdays, got our first win. Win or lose, Twitch trivia is now part of our Thursday night routine and a highlight of the week. So thank you for the podcast content, and thank you for the weekly trivia we can enjoy from home. I run a family trivia at all of our big gatherings, so I know it's a lot of work, but it's a labor of love. Still, I wanted to share our appreciation with you. I've always believed that if you find good content, you should, if you can, support it financially so it can continue to thrive. So I'm happy to say my wife and I are officially proverbial light keepers. Is it a coincidence that we signed up for Patreon the same week as our first win? Or is there some sort of collusion going on? I guess that's something the other players will never know. Thanks again, Ryan and Molly Bort. P.S. I wanted to add a no-note about the Rate My Question on the Who is the Killer in Friday the 13th. I'm not sure if this makes the question better or worse, but I wasn't a huge fan of it because this is the gotcha question in the opening scene of the movie Scream. Drew Barrymore answers that Jason is the killer, and that is why her boyfriend is killed. So I thought this was a bit of a cliche trivia question, although maybe that makes it a better question, because that is another way to get to the answer.
Yes.
Thank you, Ryan and Molly, so much for the wonderful no-note, as well as your support on Patreon. You are absolutely right. If you do enjoy our podcast, supporting it on Patreon is a great way to ensure that it keeps going, because we're not going to look at that and be like, let's stop.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
So sign up. There's a ton of bonus content on there for you to listen to as well. And yeah, what do you think about that note about the Scream connection with that Friday the 13th thing? It doesn't bother me too much. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so did I.
But I think he pointed out that it makes it another avenue to get to it, which makes me like it a little bit.
Yeah, more. I was going to say, I know that you're definitely in that realm. And I think in this instance, I agree, because it's not one of those things that people are guaranteed to remember. I mean, you know, you kind of on some level have to go by whether or not you knew something as some kind of like idea, and whether or not other people will know it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're just kind of going by like, well, if I know it, then it has to be somewhere out there in the ether that other people know as well. A lot of times you're wrong, but I think that since it's not so well known, like that you forgot it and then I forgot it, that it's a safe, fun other way to get there.
Yeah, indeed. If you'd like to write us with a mate with a missed correction,
made my question,
let's do it. A rate my question, or even just a little no note, you can write to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or call us at 1-929-356-6966.
You ready?
I am.
Tenerife, also known as the Island of Eternal Spring, is the largest of what European archipelago? A little bit of that geography for you.
Yeah. Tenerife. Can I get a spelling on that?
T-E-N-E-R-I-F-E.
Oh, so it's one word.
Yes. It's not the price.
I thought it was
coral.
Like La Reef. Tenerife.
Oh, you want those corals? Those are Tenerife. $40 for five. Mm. I'm feeling generous.
I was thinking somewhere in...
It's buy four, get one free, Lee. I know you like a deal.
I was thinking it was Italian, but now that you spell it, I'm thinking French. But I don't know a French archipelago. I don't know any European archipelagos. That's bad. I don't even like thinking of France in my mind. I can't even think of like, you know, Italy's at least got that like boot. There's all that stuff hanging off of it. Or Portugal. It's hanging out there on the Pacific Ocean coastal side. Lots of coast. I don't know about a Portuguese reef, though. The Tenerife.
Do not adjust your radios.
I'm deep saucing right now.
This man's deep in his fucking balls. This man's down at the root.
Maybe it's in the Mediterranean. Outside, like, I mean, Italy. It's terrible. The French... Catalina, the Catalina Islands. Catalina Islands.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
I think they're Spanish anyway. I don't think they're French.
The Catalina Islands is incorrect. The correct answer is the Canary Islands.
Oh.
The Canary Islands. And Elise, ye old dumb slut / dog lover, had to point out that the Canary Islands were named after dogs. Did you know that?
I didn't.
As in canine, the name Islas Canarias is likely derived from the Latin name Canarii Insulae, meaning islands of the dogs.
That must be where Wes Anderson got his idea.
Yes. According to the historian Pliny the Elder, the island Canaria contained, quote, vast multitudes of dogs of very large size.
I see. And the Catalina Islands are located off the coast of California. So
there you go. Yeah. Catalina wine mixer.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking of. Greek mythology.
Ah, fuck.
According to Greek mythology, you might know this.
You know, I had a Greek mythology question this past week that I wasn't going to ask you, but
okay.
If you ask it, maybe I will, so that we were going to have the same question.
I feel like there's a 50-50 on this one anyway.
I have a feeling it's not.
According to Greek mythology, which Titan was bound to a mountain by Zeus and cursed to have their immortal liver consumed by an eagle. Ever replenishing liver.
Oh, I know this, but I don't know this. I've heard this story, but I don't know this, I don't think. Ouch. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Ouch.
There's a movie that you and I like that features a scene that is an analog to this story, and some mm-hmm. have surmised that maybe the entire movie is based on this story or related to it.
And that movie is The Lighthouse.
Mm-hmm. You know the one.
Mm-hmm.
With the Batman and the Green Goblin.
Yes. I'm something of a lighthouse myself.
You know, and he really does. He's got that in that sequence. He's got that light shining out of his face. He really does turn into a lighthouse.
Ooh.
In that movie.
So, okay. I remember. Okay. There are two people that it could be. And their names I always confuse. There's Proteus and Prometheus. And both of them are referenced in that movie. It's 50-50. Should I flip a fucking coin?
I mean, if you don't feel like sussing anymore, sure.
Well, I mean, I really don't think I can suss any further than that. I'm surprised I know those names. I don't know what Prometheus or Proteus are known for. I don't feel like there's anything in either of their names that give me anything to go by. I know I'm less familiar with the name Proteus than I am Prometheus. Prometheus was the name of a movie, right? With an alien, a movie in the Alien franchise. Is that Prometheus?
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna say, I don't think you're giving anything away by telling me that. Because I never saw the Aliens movie either.
Really?
It was like a prequel. Yeah. You know, dude, I got to be honest with you. I'm not. I like science fiction. I do. I don't really like horror movies and anything that's going to be like jump scare. I've never really been into. Like, I know, like, you're really excited about Mandy and about, Hereditary and all the. It just doesn't really. The stuff it does for me, I don't necessarily like. Not really. I've never been into horror movies. Like, past relationships, it's been like an issue where it's like, oh, you love horror movies and I just don't.
What?
So I don't, you know. It wouldn't have helped even if it had something to do with it. Prometheus, I guess I just know that name because of that and because of other like things relating to it. I'm going to go. Am I going to go with Proteus? Or do I know Prometheus from that story? I just didn't know. Like, the ship they're going on in the first Aliens movie, or the prequel or whatever, being called Prometheus, being named after something that it got its liver ripped out forever, doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm going to go with Proteus. Is it fucking Prometheus?
Yes, Mark. God, it's Prometheus. It's fucking Prometheus, Mark.
Well, I don't fucking know. I don't read this shit. You know, it's like, it's just to me, mm-hmm. and I don't mean to offend anybody here, but it's just like religion. It's like, I just don't believe this thing. And I know that there's a story here
right.
to and be learned from, but I don't, but I mean, like, there are plenty of stories that have to do with like modern shit, you know.
But exactly, The Lighthouse is based, you know, or is rumored to be based on this. They are stories that influenced a lot of other stories throughout history, and that's why they're held on to, because Prometheus is a trickster god, okay? Mm-hmm. And he stole
like a Loki.
He stole fire like a Loki. He stole fire from the gods.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and mm-hmm. he also warned Pandora's husband, like, she's going to open that box, you know.
So what is the story of Proteus?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, see, that was, I mean, that's
you
exactly
asked me a question about Proteus, okay? But, asked me a question.
That's what I'm saying, is that, like, you know, that you know some stories and you don't know others. There's millions of these fucking stories. I don't know the fire story. I don't give a shit.
Well, we can, I mean,
I'm not going to steal fire from anybody.
As quizmasters and as this podcast is evident, we don't know 90%.
Proteus,
we don't know 90% of the stuff that we ask questions about. You know that.
It's very, very true. Okay, here's your next question. How many gold medals does Michael Phelps have? Ooh.
A lot. Again, he's the Michael Jackson of swimming.
Yeah.
His,
I don't know if he would appreciate, I don't know if he'd appreciate that likeness, but okay.
Well, as far as talent goes, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know.
I don't know if you can just stop there. I don't know if you can say he's the Michael Jackson talent-wise of swimming. And it's only it's,
I'm making talent. A distinction here. Right. I don't know his personal life. Let's see here. How many medals? He got a lot many times. He wasn't just a one and done. Didn't he compete in multiple Olympics?
Oh yeah.
I feel like yeah, so it wasn't just like oh yeah, I picked up, you know, 9 this time and blah 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 blah. He is a winning Olympian. I don't know that he holds a record for medals, but he does have quite a bit.
And I'm gonna tell you, I'm nearly positive he owns the record.
Oh, really? For most medals out yes. of anybody? Uh-oh. I should know that.
He is the most decorated Olympian of all time.
And you're asking for total medals?
No.
Just gold?
Yes.
I don't think it's double digits, but I think it's high. I'm going to go with 9.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect.
Wrong.
9. He won 8 gold medals at the 2008 Beijing Games alone.
How many? 9 at Beijing?
8.
8. Oh, okay.
In one go. He started at the 2004 Olympics, it looks like. And I believe he went to the 2016.
Oh, wow.
Olympics.
That was a lot. I thought maybe he did 2 sets, but he did.
This man was on a damn mission. He had 3 silver, 2 bronze, and 23 gold medals. Yeah.
That's so many.
That is a ridiculous amount.
27.
27 overall, 27 total, 23 of which are gold. He is the most decorated, and he is widely regarded as the greatest swimmer of all time and offered to consider to be one of the greatest athletes of all time. Very, very ridiculous.
Nice.
He has won 82 medals in major international long course competitions, of which 65 were gold.
Wow.
Outside of the Olympics. So very, very, very good.
All right. Opera is your next category. I know you love this one, Mark, this category. It's one of your favorites. Every time I see an opera question, I say, I have to put this
gotta, on the gotta ask on the Mark. He knows nothing Mark. About opera.
Yep. What German composer is known for his 1937 cantata titled Carmina Burana?
Oh, God. It's another one. Are these questions you've asked at your trivia?
No, I'm writing you custom questions now.
Yeah, because you're hitting on some shit that, like, is right on the edge of my fucking stratosphere.
These are custom tailor-made questions from Mark Davis and friends.
I'm just gonna go off of like what I'm. I don't know why this name is coming to me. I have a feeling it's wildly wrong. You're talking about the opera, right? Not the person who wrote the music.
Well, it's the composer who wrote. It's not opera. Maybe I shouldn't call this opera. He is an opera composer, but this is technically a cantata, which is not an opera.
So you're talking about the song.
Well, that the song that you were just whistling is O Fortuna,
right?
Which is the from opening. Yes. Of Carmina Burana.
Right.
Which he composed all the music, the lyrics. Well, the lyrics are a Latin poem. So yes. He set the poem to music.
My ex-girlfriend sang Carmina, and I went and saw it.
Okay, so you have a you have a link.
Yep. Carl Orff is coming to mind, and I don't know who that is, and I don't know what that means, but I don't think that's right, and I keep getting dragged towards like saying that name, but I don't think it's right. I'm helpless in the tides, just letting it pull my body whichever way it wants. Yank my pants off, touch me wherever it pleases. Stroke my nipples. Play with my hair. Kiss my face. Lap my teats. Who did this song? O Fortuna by, I'm gonna say Carl Orff.
Very nice, Mark.
Holy shit. Oh my God, what a relief. Holy fuck. I feel like I passed out.
Isn't that a magic moment in trivia where you like almost know it and you're like, I'm gonna take a chance.
I know this name, and for some reason this thing is making me think of this name, but I'm almost positive it isn't this, and then it is.
Yeah, performances today do not adhere to the standard that Orff intended. You might not know this.
No.
So he was like into this idea called Theatrum Mundi, which means that the music, the movement of the singers, and the speech were all inseparable from each other. So it was more like a performance art thing than just like a choir standing on a stage performing the music. And he developed these theories into his own musical education approach, which is called the Orff Schulwerk, or the Orff approach, which is used today in music education all across the world.
Damn.
All right, Mark. My next question, if you don't mind.
I don't mind at all.
Thank you.
In Queensland, Australia, it is illegal to own a pet rabbit unless you are what?
Queensland. So it's like one territory, just one territory in Australia has this rule, it sounds like. That's strange. Usually you hear about these like crazy laws. You're like, oh, that's Florida or something, you know. But I guess Australia is kind of like the Florida of the world. That's what they say. Or Florida is the Australia of the United States. Pet rabbit. Oh, maybe it's a magician. Maybe it's this old antiquated magician rule. Like, all right, the magicians can have the rabbits because they make them disappear, but nobody else can have rabbits, just magicians. And you must have a top hat as well. No rabbits without top hats.
I said what I said. And a coat with tails.
Now I don't have to saw this woman in half.
Thank Christ.
Well, it's a cute answer, but I don't think it's right. A child? Oh, we can't take rabbits away from the kids. But then what happens? You turn 18 and they say, illegal. You have to say goodbye to Fluffy. Sorry. This is an interesting question.
Thank you.
I don't know. So I'm floating between right now, child and magician. Child magician. You're a child magician. If you're a child magician, you can have a rabbit.
A child magician?
Yeah.
That's half correct?
Oh, okay.
Which one are you going to go with?
Magician?
Magician is correct.
Hey! Wow.
Good job.
You're very generous with that.
Well,
I guess the child magician is still a magician.
Yeah, but it's not just child magicians that can have it. Adult magicians can also.
Okay, that's good.
Yes, from Queensland's Department of Agriculture and Fisheries brochure, Rabbits and rabbits are Australia's most destructive agricultural and environmental introduced animal pest.
Mm.
So they do not allow them. Also, if you are a scientist, you can have one for scientific studies. But not as, I don't think, not really on the same level in which magicians can have them, which is more like a one-on-one basis.
Right. So Ben Linus from the Dharma Initiative, rabbits, okay. But
sure,
average person, no.
Yeah.
I have a another movies question for you, but this time related to the casting, not the soundtrack.
Okay.
Alongside Nigel Terry, Liam Neeson, and Patrick Stewart, director John Borman cast Nicole Williamson and Helen Mirren as Merlin and Morgana, respectively, in what 1981 film, based on the idea that their personal animosity would improve their performances? What was the name of that movie? 1981, starring Nigel Terry, Liam Neeson, and Patrick Stewart. Director John Borman cast Nicole Williamson and Helen Mirren as Merlin and Morgana, respectively. The year is 1981, and Williamson and Mirren were cast based on the idea that their personal animosity would bring out a good performance.
Must have been a young Liam Neeson. I have no idea. No idea that Helen Mirren ever played Morgana. Man, I'll say, Jesus Christ, how do I even guess on this? I'm blanking on any Tales from the Dark Side. I have no idea.
Tales from the Dark Side?
I don't know.
Do you know, Merlin and Morgana, what story they're associated with, right?
I know that there is it, like Lancelot and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. So the, Knights of the Round Table.
That is closer, but still incorrect.
Okay. Good enough.
The correct answer is Excalibur.
Oh,
Excalibur.
Okay.
Yeah. You didn't have to watch that in literature in high school.
I might have, but I might have fallen asleep.
Yeah, they made us watch that. So Mirren and Williamson had previously appeared on stage together during a performance of Macbeth, where Mirren described Williamson as dark and troubled and said he basically hated her. But according to her, her and Williamson wound up becoming very good friends during the filming of Excalibur. So water under the bridge there.
Hmm. Is this my final question for you?
Indeed.
Opened in 1583, Bakken is the oldest amusement park in the world. In what country does it reside? I'm sure you're going to want a spelling. B-A-K-K-E-N. Mm. Opened in 1583.
Yeah.
Bakken is the oldest amusement park in the world. In what country does it reside?
I just have this gut feeling that it's Germany. Sounds like it's still open. So yeah, I don't know. It sounds vaguely Germanic. Maybe Bakken. Maybe it's Japan. But 1583, they wouldn't have amusement. They were not fucking around with the music parts in 1583.
You don't fuck around.
They've got bigger problems on their plate than amusement. Such as, Ronin wandering or, just violent emperors. Germany seems like, yeah, let's get drunk and spin around in a barrel. Let's do it. Let's just get in barrels and roll down hills. Let's do everything with barrels. I'm going Germany.
Sorry, that's incorrect.
Wrong.
Ah!
The formal name is Dyrehavsbakken. Dyrehavsbakken.
Austria?
Which means the deer pastures hill, but it's commonly referred to as Bakken, which means the hill. And it
exists. I knew there was a hill involved.
Inside Denmark.
Oh, okay.
10 kilometers north of Copenhagen. Opened in 1583. It actually has wooden roller coasters. It has 2.5 to 2.7 million visitors per year. and is the second most popular attraction in Denmark after the more widely known Tivoli Gardens amusement park.
Okay.
Admission is free.
Nice.
So we should go there.
Yeah.
And let's do a live from Bakken thing where you and I are on the roller coasters. And we can ask questions on the roller coasters.
It sounds like it would be slightly easier to do that than Namibia, but I just feel like we owe it to Namibia first.
I really
go there.
Think we do.
You know, yeah, that's got to be our first international.
Is Namibia war torn? Do you know?
Well, we would be. I want to go. I want to do it from where the desert meets the sea.
Okay.
So there's perfect. Nobody there.
There. Good. Good.
It's just in the middle of nowhere. We're going to have to helicopter in
some extra batteries.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we don't have John Landis involved with a helicopter.
No, we won't be involving him.
Okay.
Good. After what we know. All right. Let's take a little break and then we'll be right back in round three with our final questions. We're back. No rate my question this week. So
yeah, what the hell?
Yeah. Feel free to submit one at nonsensetrivia@gmail.com
or many.
1-929-356-6966. I feel like since I went to my star rating, now people are like, oh, I don't want low stars.
Yeah.
I don't want 2.5. 2.5 is average. It's fine.
People are used to letter grades.
Yeah.
They're not used to stars.
Right.
Letter grades, I can deal with getting a C, but letter grades, it's like, I'm as bad as Geely.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to be as bad as Geely.
But that's just because they don't know how to rate Geely properly. That's a one-star movie. All right. Let's go ahead and give each other our final questions. First up, Mark, a U.S. president's question for yourself.
Okay.
As was once tradition, which 20th century American president was the last to wear a top hat at their inauguration? As was once tradition, which 20th century American president was the last to wear a top hat to their presidential inauguration?
20th century?
Mm-hmm. Originally, I did not have that in there, but I was like, I'll at least give this clue because top hats run the gamut.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank goodness you did, because I almost said Abraham Lincoln.
Just because he's
so synonymous with the top hat, and I thought, well, maybe he's synonymous with that top hat because he was the last president inaugurated with a top hat. But it's someone in the 1900s. Trying to think of every inauguration I've seen. And all of them, I can't think of anybody wearing a top hat. Up to JFK. You know, is it someone that I know? Is it someone that's just like a fucking, so it's somewhere between around Woodrow Wilson or so up to, I still can't remember who was president at the turn of the century. Can you believe that? I think it was Woodrow Wilson though. Up to JFK. I'm going to say Teddy Roosevelt. Just as a guess. Wrong.
No, it was a little bit later than that, my friend. Can you see that little picture right there? That would be John F. Kennedy.
Wow, it is JFK.
Mm-hmm. He was not a fan of hats, but he did not want to break tradition. So he wore one for at least a little bit. Most presidents would wear the hat the entire inauguration day.
I don't want to wear that hat.
I'll put it on this time. Something to protect my dome from the elements.
But then you take it off. Who was president after him?
LBJ, Lyndon B. Johnson.
Okay.
And I don't think he was on the plane going, hey, anybody got a top hat?
Wait, we need a top hat.
Yeah, hold on a second. We're forgetting the most important traditional part.
Wow.
So, yeah, JFK, last president to wear a top hat to their inauguration.
Do you want a question about food or a question about cars?
Food.
What food's name literally means twice cooked? And no, it is not the twice baked potato.
How did you know that's what I was thinking of?
I know your brain.
Twice cooked. Hmm. Egg? No, it's not egg. Egg with a question mark, though, for some reason, just inherently funny to me. Egg? Probably Arrested Development. Twice cooked. You cook it twice. Maybe it's bagel? Because I think you boil a bagel and then you bake it. Bagel. I don't know. Refried beans. But that's not like, I mean, that's not what you're talking about. You're talking about like the name of a food, like not like a dish.
Correct.
A food.
A food.
So in this case, it would be beans, for example, not can refried of beans. Yeah.
Yes.
Twice cooked. What do you cook twice? I can't. I don't know.
They were cooked. I'll give you a little bit of a hint here.
Mm-hmm.
They got this name because they were originally cooked in a twofold process. First baked and then dried out in a slow oven.
Sounds like the same process, just worded differently. Baked and then dried out. Now
you know that it's a baked thing.
Yeah.
You know, that cuts out some different kinds of food that it could be.
And then dried out. So it's wet after it's baked.
I didn't say twice baked. I said twice cooked. Now you know it's baked.
Yeah.
Come on, that's some help.
Sure. I mean, bagels still fits within this parameter. I guess it's not the answer because you're giving me extra hints here.
I didn't say it was or wasn't. That may have been to make you latch on more to that answer.
But you didn't say it all boiled, you know, and that's bagels are boiled partially. And then I think finished being baked. Or maybe they're just boiled outright. Maybe they're not even baked twice or cooked twice. I only know casseroles.
I only know baked casseroles, ziti. Damn it.
Tuna helper. I'll go with bagel. Bagel.
Sorry, bagel is incorrect.
Teach me.
It is boiled for a short time and then baked. That is true. But the correct answer I was looking for, in Old French, bis, meaning twice, and the last half of it, where is it here?
Cut.
Coctus, to cook or cooked.
Biscoctus. Biscotti?
The biscuit.
Biscuit. Oh, okay.
The biscuit. Oh. Yes.
All right.
Originally, biscuits were cooked in a twofold process, first baked and then dried out in a slow oven.
Okay. Interesting. Know. I had no idea. Biscuit.
I thought you would start twice. Going through like a DI, like something that you knew was a two.
As biscuit. Yeah, I see where that's a good hint.
Yeah, either die or buy as a,
since we don't have a rate my question, I will give this an A plus. That was not you. My failure on this one. Or five stars is what I should say. Not A plus.
I'll take it whatever it is. I'll take however you do it, baby.
Mark.
Lee.
Great episode.
Yes, fantastic to be with you again. Fantastic to see your skin in real time.
Until next time, we can gaze at each other's skin again.
Indeed, I can't wait.
That concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. Thank you for listening. Please join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways, the easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. Thank you if you've done that. And you could also leave a written review on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you if you've done that. And you can support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page. Mark, should we thank them?
I think we should. Thank you to those Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show, including we have our new proverbial light keepers, as mentioned earlier on, the Borts. Molly and Ryan, thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thank you to our quiz daddies, Dylan, Tommy, and Tim. Our team captains, Sean, Lydia, Gil.
It's Gil.
A while to get in second gear. Kristen, Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, and David Holbrook. David Holbrook, David Holbrook.
And Gay.
And Gay. Thanks to our proverbial lightkeepers, Nicole, Alex, Jenny, Christopher, Spencer, Caitlin, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, and Lucas.
Thank you.
And thank you to our Rumpelstiltskins, Kevin, Sarah, Tiffany, Allison, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.
Mike, Circuit, Short.
Michael S.
Mike, Shelley, Mary.
And Michael J.
Mikey Top Hat, J. FK. Perfect. If you'd like to write us with a Rate My Question or miscorrection, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or call us at 1-929-356-6966. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia and on Twitter at No Non Trivia.
We have a Facebook group you can join as well. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. Feel free to post stuff that is related to episodes or any questions you may have, et cetera, et cetera. If you're a little too scared to call in or write a personal email, we can still read that stuff here on the podcast. And finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service.
Five stars only, please. Until next time, No Nonsense listeners.
Have a great week.